Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain.
Lots of new housing with more space.
Lots of doors slamming in our face.
I'll get a terrace apartment.
Better get rid of your accent.
Life can be bright in America.
If you can fight in America.
Life is all right in America.
If you're all white in America.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Behind the Curtain. This is Paul Listick. I do not have to tell you what song you were just listening to or the iconic, legendary show it was from. That, of course, America from West Side Story. And that can only mean one thing, that I'm being joined by one of the stars of the film, the original film of West Side Story, George Chakiris. He played Bernardo. But he did some other things in that West Side Story run you might not know about. He explores it all in his new book called My West Side Story, a memoir by George Chakiris. George, welcome to the podcast at WGN Radio. Thanks for your time.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for your time. It's nice to be with you.
Well, it's an honor to have you. You know, I've read the full book, read it all the way through. It's actually a fairly easy read, and I have to compliment you on one thing. Most people who write bios, it takes us until about halfway through the book until we get to the stuff we really want to read about. In your case, the West Side Story years and all of that. And you had this quote early on in your book where you say, you know, some people say you should start a book with chapter two because nobody cares about the opening part. And for you, by chapter three, we're already well into West Side Story. That is what this book is about.
It's about that, but I do talk about the different work experiences over the years. Not all of them. I could remember everything, but I'm really pretty much talking about my working experiences, the different people that I have the good fortune to work with, projects that I've been able to work on. When I think back, that's what mattered to me, and that's what I always wanted to do, dreamed of doing when I was a kid. And so having achieved that kind of stuff was just really wonderful and really great to talk about.
You do talk about your childhood some, and what I loved was at one point you say, for you, movies were not an escape. We always hear about going to the movies being an escape. You said, for you, they're a destination.
Absolutely, and they really, I'll bet it's that way for a lot of kids. I'll bet it is, but it certainly was for me. It's such a great way to put it, destination. I'm glad we thought of that. I can remember one that we were living in Long Beach, and I think I was about 12, and there was a Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers movie called Barclays of Broadway, her first movie in color, and they also haven't made a movie in a few years. Anyway, it was coming to town, and I could not wait to see this movie. I was dreaming of it for days and weeks, however long it was, before it actually came to town. It finally got there, and I almost kind of had a fear. Something is going to happen and stop me from seeing this movie. I was nervous about it. Anyway, I finally got downtown. I got to see the movie, loved it, and on the bus, on the way home, my neck was starting to feel uncomfortable, a little bit swollen. Well, I had the mumps. So I saw that movie just in time.
I love it. And, you know, let's put one myth right to bed. A lot of people who know of you but maybe not don't know a lot about your background, they say, oh, yeah, George Chakiris, he's a Puerto Rican guy. His family's from Puerto Rico, and that's why he was in the movie. That's not true, George.
No. My parents are from a Greek village in Turkey. I'm Greek on both sides. Both my parents are Greek. So I'm a Greek. It's kind of the reverse of Anthony Quinn, a Mexican guy, playing Zorba the Greek. This is how casting happens, and that's why casting is so interesting. And by the way, even though he was not Greek, who else could have played that role? Nobody. He was perfect.
That's where casting comes in, as you in playing Bernardo, which we'll talk about. But the other thing is, and even I didn't realize this, because some of your roles are uncredited in the early parts of your career, you worked with everybody. I mean, Marilyn Monroe, one of my favorite Christmas movie of all time, I have to watch it every Christmas, is White Christmas. Yeah. You are in there dancing with Rosemary Clooney, but you're not credited.
Well, I was just one of the dancers, and dancers, of course, were never credited. First of all, there were sometimes there were four of us in the number, sometimes there were 16 of us in the number, and anyway, dancers, of course, were never credited because that would take too much time. But also, it wasn't important for dancers to be credited. So, of course, all of us working as chorus dancers, you were never expected to be credited, of course. So we didn't miss that aspect at all. We didn't mind. We just loved what we were doing.
You had a lot of stories about Marilyn Monroe. You worked with her among so many of the greats. You're in Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend as a chorus member. But one of the things I think is really great is a lot of people have misconceptions about her and other stars. And because you worked with them all, you set a lot of that straight. And Marilyn Monroe is one of them where you make it very clear. She was quite the caring, intelligent woman.
Well, I never spoke to her. I didn't get to know her, but I was around her enough to, in retrospect, you know, get I think a pretty good impression of aspects of her. She was working on Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend for Blondes. It was Marilyn and all the guys around her, and she was very quiet. And I've heard that about so many people, by the way. She was very quiet, very concentrated on her work. When they served a cold cut, for any reason, she didn't look in the mirror. She didn't go to her dressing room. She didn't think. She went right back to her starting position to start again. And when I think about that, I think that says something about her and her commitment and her to her work. That's what it was always about for them. It was the work. I was around her other times, you know, where, again, she was quiet. She seemed beautifully kind and nice to me. That was what I always felt about her. Very likable, but not, I wouldn't say shy, maybe shy, but just quiet. And I thought that was beautiful.
And one more before we get to West Side Story itself. You talk about being on set. You're doing one of the dance numbers for a movie. You see this very young, attractive, young lady sitting there. You're too shy to say hello. Of course, it turns out to be one of the great stars of all time.
Oh.
No, I'm talking about Elizabeth Taylor. Elizabeth Taylor.
Oh, well, you know, when I was a kid, I sang in a boys' choir in Long Beach, California, in an Episcopal church. We sang in the Sunday church service every Sunday. And that choir was quite well known and had worked in a lot of movies over the years. Different boys, of course, as their voices changed. But we did get to, when I was at the choir, we did get to be, and we're in a musical sequence in a movie called Song of Love with Katharine Hepburn, Paul Henreid, and Robert Walker. Katharine Hepburn and Paul Henreid played Clara and Robert Schumann, famous composers and musicians. And in this sequence, it was at that fantastic MGM set, theater set, huge, just beautiful. And it's a concert sequence. It was a full orchestra on stage, musicians on the side, and the choir in the very back, up high in the back. And in this scene, Paul Henreid as Robert Schumann is starting to have mental problems, and he's conducting, and because he's having mental problems, he has to stop. And when he stops, his wife, played by Katharine Hepburn, quietly walks in from the wings and takes him off stage. That was the scene that we were all involved in. But because we were in that scene, we had to be on the MGM lot for about 2 weeks. We went to school for 3 hours a day, but we got to meet Elizabeth Taylor just quietly. In fact, the way I was next to her, she and I and a couple of other people were listening to Mario Lanza record, and so I was next to her. And also, the schoolhouse at Metro, which was a schoolhouse, of course, for Jane Powell, for Elizabeth Taylor, for all the people under contract, they had to go to school too. But when we were there, they had a Halloween party for all the young people on the lot. And by the way, Elizabeth Taylor was very quiet. but when we were one of the guys in the choir, a couple of years older than me, really nice looking guy, had the courage to ask Elizabeth Taylor to dance, and she quietly, very quietly, agreed and did it. But I was too shy. I would never have thought of doing that because. Just being, I thought, well, I shouldn't do that, so I never did. So I got to be around Elizabeth Taylor for all of the 10 minutes or something like that. But that was such an amazing time. an impressive time for a young guy who loved movies to be actually on a movie lot, in a movie studio, in a scene in a movie, and it was just such an impressive experience.
And then you enter the world of greatness, of course. A lot of people think that you're sort of the very beginning of West Side Story, but the truth is, you write about the fact that you saw West Side Story. It had already been open a year on Broadway, the Winter Garden Theater. You were fortunate enough to see it with Carol Lawrence and the great Larry Kurt. And that's where you find out you're going to be auditioning for the London show, but it's not Bernardo you get cast as.
Right. Well, in Ruth Mitchell, who was the stage manager at the time, arranged all Jerome Robbins' auditions. And when I met her, she looked at me. She said, "I think you should read for the role of Bernardo." She gave me a script, and of course, I worked on it. And when I met Jerry for the first time, he was gracious and just kind, and he had such a great smile. But so I read for Bernardo, and after I did that, he asked me to look at the role of Ruth, which I did. Took about 20 minutes to go back into the wings and look at that scene, and did that. And then he asked me to learn Cool. In the theater version, Cool is sung by Riff. So they gave me sheet music. I worked on Cool and came back maybe a week or 10 days later, and then did Cool for Jerry. And then it was on my birthday. I remember my birthday, December 16th, 1958. I got a call from Ruth Mitchell telling me I had the role of Riff in the London company. And that same day, I had 7 checks for my California unemployment, $35 each. And I needed the money, so it was really a great day.
I love it. And off to London you go. And you talk about, I think before the show opened, you're in rehearsals, and you get there one day and you hear Hal Prince, the great Hal Prince, giving an interview. You hear him say to a reporter, "Pay no attention to anybody in the show. Just watch the show." And I'm thinking, not only are you great, you're appearing with Cheetah Rivera.
Oh, my. Well, I'll tell you. After we rehearsed, before going to London, she had been out of the show because she had a child, Lisa, her gorgeous daughter. Lisa was about 6 months old at the time. So Cheetah had been out of the New York show for a while. So for the London company, which Cheetah was, thank God, was part of, we all had rehearsed and we presented the show one evening for all the theater community in New York. And they were so thrilled to see Cheetah on stage, as she is kind of thrilling to see on stage anytime. But one of my co-workers is, yes, so when we opened in Manchester, before we opened, it was Hal Prince. I remember hearing him say to some of the people from the media that it was not a terrible thing to say, but I noticed it. It was like, pay no, not his words exactly, but basically saying the important thing here is not the people, it's the show. And I remember thinking to myself, are you kidding? With Cheetah on the stage, is there anybody that you pay attention to that? And to make a long story short, they didn't. Cheetah, when we opened in London, was absolutely the toast of London. She really took them by storm. So there's that story.
And I have to tell you, Cheetah, this is your interview, not mine, but I have to tell you a very quick Cheetah story. I went to the cast party when she was here in Chicago for the rink, and all these press were trying to get to her, and she didn't want to be bothered. And she looked at me. I was not the press there. I was just a guest. She called me up. She said, "You, honey, come here. Let's go have a drink." And she takes me to a back room where nobody is there. I said, "Cheetah, I don't know who, I'm not the press. I don't know what why you would want to sit." She goes, "Honey, I don't want to talk to them. I want to sit and talk to you. Let's have a drink." She was wonderful.
What? I guess you were around, and you know, everybody loves Cheetah. She's one of the best people. Cheetah, with all her fame, stardom, success, and everything, has always stayed absolutely the same person. She's unchanged in the most beautiful way. We're still good friends, and I don't get to see her as long as I'd like to. She lives in the East. I live here. But I really do love her. I really love her.
And we get to, and some people may not know George, but that the role of Tony, and of course, this is how movies get made, right? They wanted Box Store Extravaganza. They considered Elvis Presley, Robert Redford, Burt Reynolds, Warren Beatty. What an amazing list of people that could have been Tony. But of course, we know it goes to Richard Beamer.
Well, you know, after I did the show in London about a year and a half, and after quite some time, more than a year, but quite late into that run, we started hearing rumors about the upcoming movie. And I remember hearing very specifically that you, because they put it on the board of newspaper clippings and things like that. So the two names that I remember that were being evidently considered for the film were Elizabeth Taylor and Elvis Presley. Of course, that turned out to not happen. But of course, they were considering all the people that whose names you just mentioned. A lot of people were considered for this movie in the course of its casting.
And I always thought the entire movie was filmed on soundstage, but you write that the prologue was actually filmed on 68th Street between Amsterdam and West End. So you did some shooting before you went off to California.
The entire film, scenes, the musical sequence, dance sequence, all of it was rehearsed thoroughly before we ever started filming. But the first thing that was filmed, the guys, we all flew to New York for the prologue, the opening sequence of the film. We all stayed at the Warwick Hotel, and it was a great time. But we did film at 68th and Amsterdam was one location, and the other location where the schoolyard was, I think, was 110th and 2nd Avenue. So those were the two locations in New York. And the first one, 68th in Amsterdam, was all those buildings were vacant. They were just left standing for the film. Once the film was over, of course, all of that came down, and that's partly where Lincoln Center stands today. So, but it was an incredible location because it was real. There were no people living inside, but that didn't matter. The exteriors were real, and it gave a real beginning to this story.
And as much as we're used to knowing that, the cast members, whoever they're playing, but they fraternize outside the set, they're good friends, but actually, in your case, I think it was Jerry Robbins and others, they wanted to make sure, or Harold Prince, they wanted to make sure that you guys were not so friendly, and so the Sharks, the Jets, you didn't fraternize together. You didn't spend time together, at least at the beginning, right? He wanted that tension.
You're absolutely right. The very first day of rehearsal for the London Company in New York, Jerry sat everybody down and gave a little bit of a speech. And one of the things he did say was, I want the Jets over there. I want the Sharks over there. And he didn't want any either gang socializing with each other between and during breaks. Even at the end of the day, that's how he was creating that tension. It was a really smart move on his part because it really worked, and it made it again. It just made the tension real. We weren't acting necessarily. It was already in place thanks to his beautiful idea of separating us. I keep hearing stories about other West Side Story productions in the theater, and people have continued to do that. Keep the Sharks over there and the Jets over there because it's really important that tension, but that anger and all of that is there when you watch it. Because if it's not there, in that aspect of it doesn't work. It has to be present for an audience watching the piece.
So, George, let me also ask you one of the shocks, I think, was at one point you find out Jerry Robbins, the master of all, gets fired.
Well, again, before anything was filmed, the entire piece, like the theater, everything has been rehearsed. Everything. So, of course, we start filming. We go, and we got well into the film. I would say 2/3 of everything was filmed, maybe more. So, but Jerry is a perfectionist with himself first, and my understanding is he was just taking too much time, and time is money. So they did. They did let him go, but what I'd like to remind people of, they let him go when it was safe to do it. They had more than enough of his work on film, and everything had been rehearsed. So it was kind of not convenient, but it was okay to let him go because artistically they had his work there. And thank God that they did, because in my opinion, without Jerry Robbins, it could never have been the same, ever.
And perhaps that's why you write that Cheetah Rivera said, "How do you fire God?"
And Cheetah loved him, absolutely. Yes, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So let me. Here's the other thing. For people who only know the film, this America, we opened with my playing a clip of you singing. You're dancing in America, but actually in the Broadway show, the men aren't even in that number, and we get lots of lyric changes in this show. One would think that anything goes in the movies. That wasn't true back then.
Well, the show originally, Cheetah Rivera was playing Anita. She's tremendous. The American, and she's an extraordinary dancer, singer, everything. I mean, you've seen her, so you know what she's like. She's extraordinary. So the American number was just the girls. And hey, with Cheetah, you didn't need anything else. but so it was a beautiful number in the theater, and it always got tremendous, tremendous applause, the American number. But in the film, the wonderful thing about the film is it gave the guys something more to do, was to involve the guys in that number and have that number be a counter kind of play between the guys and the girls about the pros and the cons of coming to this country and pros and cons of being Puerto Rican, just playing with each other. It wasn't political. It was just young people playing with each other. But it was a great thing. I was so lucky, and all the guys were, that we got to be in the American number, because that made a huge difference to us and our parts in it.
And I got to tell you, first of all, of course, if people don't know, they should. You won the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor. And I went back and watched that clip of the year you won it. George, you had to be sitting there when you heard the names of the people that got called, who you were up against for that award. It's unbelievable. I mean, Jackie Gleason and The Hustler and Peter Falk, what an amazing group. And you shine through, you won.
Well, it was, and Montgomery Clift, it was an incredible
And George C.
year,
Scott, and George C. Scott.
The quote-unquote competition was really very strong. But West Side had been such a success that any of us associated with it, of course, benefited from that. And I got lucky.
Well, it was well deserved, but what a memory that is. And you share in the book letters you got from Joan Crawford. I mean, what amazing. George, I only have a few minutes left with you. I want to talk about a couple of other things. First of all, you've recorded some CDs. You've got a Gershwin CD. I actually own that one. I have you singing Gershwin. You've recorded another ones, but you've always seen yourself as a dancer, right? Even more so than a singer and such.
Well, because I, as a performer, because of West Side Story, of course, everybody had to be able to dance, but singing for the role of Bernardo was not key. But I was a singer. I started as a singer, basically, when I think back in those boys' choirs, and I always loved singing. I kind of knew, even as a boy soprano, that I had a nice voice. And by the way, that Gershwin album, I made that album while I was doing West Side Story in London. And I got, Gandhi, the film Gandhi was on TCM just a few nights ago, directed by Richard Attenborough. And there was a wonderful magazine about music and recording studios, recording equipment, all that kind of stuff. And Richard Attenborough wrote a column in that magazine once a month, and he gave me a really nice review of my Gershwin album, and I still have it. I just love the fact that Richard Attenborough said that about that album. It just really made me feel great.
And I'm proud that I own that album, so I got to tell you. And I also want to mention, you become a jewelry designer, georgechakaris.com. People check jewelry for men, mostly for women, but you have some pieces for men, and it's a beautiful piece. You work primarily with silver.
I decided a long time ago, I fell in love with silver, so that's what I've always used in everything I make. Yeah. I love silk. It's beautiful.
Well, It is beautiful. GeorgeTicharis.com is where people can check out your work. And I know I want to own a piece of it. It's you have some beautiful men's bracelet. It's just gorgeous stuff. Before I let you go, George, you know they're remaking West Side Story. Why not? Let's do it again. It's a classic, only this is a Spielberg version. First of all, are you involved in it at all?
Ask me that again, that last part, sorry.
Are you involved in the Spielberg upcoming movie version of West Side?
No, I'm not. You know, the other person involved is Rita Moreno, and it makes such great sense that she's doing in his movie what she's doing. It's just it's a beautiful idea, and it really works. But there would have been nothing, really nothing for me, no reason for me to be in that version at all, none at all. So of course I never thought of it, and I do expect that he will do something really wonderful because he's a really wonderful filmmaker. And listen, he had a great template to work from. In my opinion, the work of the four men who created West Side Story, who actually created West Side Story for the theater and for the film, and then all the work that was done on the film on those many months and years and everything of preparation. So the film that I was in, The West Side Story, that we were in, Steven Spielberg had that to work from. And it must have been a real blessing to have that, because without it, you couldn't do anything. So that template, yeah, that was there as an example for him must have been an extraordinary benefit in him wanting to do whatever he does. I do expect that we're doing something really good, absolutely.
Well, final question, George. If Spielberg chooses to pay homage to you, do you have I have an answer to this now. What would you have him do to pay homage to George Chakiris? I have an answer if you don't.
Ask me that again. What Steven Spielberg asked me?
What would Steven Spielberg wanted to pay homage to you, honor you in the new film, what would he do?
Boy, I kind of have no idea. Well, I can try to imagine what he might think was, but I don't even know what Steven Spielberg thought of me in the film. I don't know where to go with this because I have nothing to base it on.
I'll give you the answer. I'll give you the answer. It's that iconic image of you, the iconic image of you, Bernardo, with his hand on the wall. That's what he'll do.
Well, yeah. You know, that was the very first thing that we shot on and making the film. And I remember doing it and how important it was to do what Jerry wanted us to do. But that did become an iconic kind of figure. It was a strong visual impression as well. So it was a great. It was very lucky for me to have played Bernardo and to have been directed by Jerry, and also the happenstance of the way that very first shot was done against that red brick wall. It has really nice impact.
I think it's magnificent, and I'm going to look for that as his tribute to you in the new West Side Story. The book is called My West Side Story, a Memoir. My guest, George Chakiris. Please check out his jewelry line for men and women. Primarily, it's a lot for women, for sure, at georgechakiris.com. George, you're fantastic. Your career has been amazing. Academy Award winner. Thank you for your time. I wish you decades more of good health and blessings. Thank you, George.
Gosh, thank you. I have such a great time talking to you. You have been so nice to spend time with. You really have.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes and tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.